It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, serious issue to discuss. Children's cereal mascots. Now, I don't know, you may have been like me and really not had access to all the sugar cereals and stuff when you were a kid, but I know you watch TV, so I know you saw all the commercials like I did. Yep. So
loved them.
And they all had weird narratives, and many of them very confrontational. Like Tony the Tiger, the least of it. Like Tony the Tiger is just a tiger. He has a cereal for some reason. He's bringing it to the masses. That's fine. Like that's a worthy cause or whatever. But then we get into, you know, the obvious one, Trix Rabbit.
Yeah.
And it's trying to get the Trix and the kids won't let him have it.
Trix is for kids.
Lucky the Leprechaun, who has Lucky Charms and the kids are trying to steal it.
Yeah.
Fred Flintstone, who has, for some reason, he has Pebble cereal and Barney doesn't. And Barney is constantly manipulating him for his cereal.
I think Barney just would rather have cereal he steals than to go buy it.
Stolen cereal tape.
Yeah, he's just that kind of guy.
Apparently, see, I am too young to remember the era of the Cookie Crisp Wizard.
Oh, yeah.
For me, Cookie Crisp has always been the freaking Keystone Cop and the burglar who would get away with it every time, except then his dog freaks out every time. I mean, yeah, stop taking the dog with you. And then freaking Cocoa Puffs that we never really address. Is his name Cuckoo? His name's not Cuckoo. What is his name?
I think, well, that's the only, I mean.
He's Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, but like he has a name, I think.
Oh, well, I don't know.
And like, it's a drug thing, like without a doubt, like. He loses his mind when he has them. And
yeah.
I don't even remember. Like, I think those commercials, as I remember them, are people just pushing him off the wagon. Like, I don't think anybody was trying to steal from him or he was trying to steal from. I think it was very much like, here's some Cocoa Puffs. He's like, oh, shit. I, you know, 31 days sober. And you're like, just have a spoonful. And then he loses his shit.
It is kind of like that. Yeah.
So my question is, which of those did you respond to inside? I'll start to sort of explain what it is. For reasons I don't understand, the one that got, I mean, the Trix Rabbit was a little bit, because those kids were kind of snots about it. I couldn't really figure out what that was, and I felt bad for them. But for some reason, the one that really got me was Barney and Fred. Because, like, they're best friends, and Barney's whole thing was just to, like, screw with Fred to steal his cereal. And I'm like, why? What kind of friendship is this? This is a terrible friend. Why are you doing this?
I mean, you didn't mention Snap, Crackle, and Pop.
Yeah, what was their narrative, though? They just showed up when you ate breakfast. I mean, okay, I do seem to remember... Pop was sort of like the picked on one, maybe, but that's sort of all I remember about that. And of course, Sugar Bear. But he was, I think, just a Sinatra impression. So that really never did anything. No, sorry, probably a Dean Martin impression.
Dean. I just watched. So my dad's mom's birthday, I think 110th birthday, was just this past week. I mean, she's passed away, obviously, but he was talking about her and it reminded me that there was a couple occasions where he called her Granny Goodwitch. And I looked that up. It's like, where did he get that? And it was from a Honeycrisp commercial. And so I found the commercial and I texted it to the family. Dad said, yeah, I remember that ad, but I don't remember calling mom that. But anyway, so in this ad, Granny Goodwitch is, it's a black and white ad. It's, I don't remember what year it's from. And I just watched this like yesterday. And she says, oh, I have to hide my Honeycrisp from the sugar bear. And he's coming and he's singing his, you know, in the Dean Martin sounding voice. Honeycrisp. Yeah. He comes into her house and she's trying
to
hide.
It's got a highball in one hand.
She's hiding it, but he keeps finding it. And it's a really weird commercial. But so I was just watching a commercial like that. And you bring this up. So that's an interesting coincidence. But the thing is, I don't remember responding to any of those ads. I liked the Monster cereals for some reason. I thought that though they were fun. Frankenberry and Count Chocula, but there was no narrative there either. It was just, thought it was
except
fun.
That they just wanted you to come eat their cereal and sometimes competed over it. So like that one was like a weird, like lonely shut-in kind of tale.
I never had them ever.
Me neither. I've never had those. I still have the urge every once in a while. I'm like, I should go buy some.
But I liked the characters and the idea. As far as the rest of them, like you say, they did have a narrative, but I was like, yeah, you know, whatever. I didn't care about that.
I don't know. They affected me pretty powerfully. But only certain ones. I don't know. I never really felt for Lucky the Leprechaun's plot. I mean, I do now feel for the racist depiction. I feel sympathy there. But I never felt, because I was just like, he's trying to keep it from people. And the thing is, what those commercials made obvious is that in their cartoon land, the cereal was unlimited in supply. So there was no reason to hoard it. Because like people were like diving into giant fields of it and shit. It's everywhere. And the thing with the kids not letting the rabbit have it just seemed just cruel. But something about Barney, it stuck in my head, a terrible, terrible thing. One of the Pebbles commercials, the Fruity Pebbles commercials, involved Fred and Barney rapping. Because of course it did. And Barney was doing a verse and the last line, and Fred was kind of the hype man and was just like repeating the last line each time. And Barney's last line was, but to get that fruity taste, I've got a trick, Fred. And Fred's like, to get that fruity taste, he's got a trick, Fred, Barney. And he ran off with it. And that one just sticks in me to this day. And I'm like, I would slap the shit out of Barney Rubble. What the hell is he doing?
Did Captain Crunch have any narrative at all? I don't remember.
Yeah, the devil would show up and try and make his cereal soggy is what it comes down to. I mean, it wasn't the devil, but it was like random bad, the sog monsters or whatever would show up. And I don't even think they'd threaten the kids. The kids would just be there and Captain be like, you want in on this? And they're like, sure. And so then there'd be like a ship and then he would be so crunchy that they left. And then we had some other weird, I mean, we'd have little one-off ones. Oops, All Berries was a whole, its own commercial thing where the factory like screwed up, but every one had a version of that. Whenever they were having a special edition, they were like, oh, somebody accidentally put magic poop in the pond where our berries grow. So now they're magic poop berries or, you know, whatever. We hit the make them give even more diabetes switch in our factory floor. So now they're twice as sweet and all of that junk, like temporary ones. But yeah, the captain mostly was just like, I'm a captain. You try and make my cereal soggy, I'll kick the shit out of you and enjoy.
Maybe the monster cereals didn't have narratives because it's like, well, everybody knows these monsters and what their backstories basically are. So we don't have to say anything else. It's just Count Chocula. He's a vampire.
I think there was a minimal one. Like I think it was like kids show up in a scary castle and then like, it's a nice dude with cereal. And then, like I said, but then they would kind of like fight over it because he'd be like, no, don't eat that, eat my stuff. And So like, I think it's one of those stories where like the scary house on your block didn't have a witch in it. It just had nice people who wanted friends and had tasty cereal.
Like blueberry cereal. Or
yeah, blueberry and Frankenberry.
Count Chocula.
And then Count Chocula. And then I think there was another one that showed up every once in a while. I can't, like, I think there was a mummy one.
There was also a werewolf one. It was Beast, called Beast something. I forget. But it wasn't
meat flavored.
No.
I want to say the mummy was like peanut butter. I don't remember. But
Beast.
It used to just be Chocula and Frankenberry. And then blueberry was occasionally, and then eventually blueberry like hit the big time.
I just thought they were all cool ideas.
Frankenberry, I loved it because I loved fruity stuff and the chocolate stuff. And frequently you had to pick between like really tasty flavor cereal or the cereal with marshmallows. And I'm like, this is both. It's like Trix and Lucky Charms. I do remember, though, I was just at the age when Lucky Charms started frosting their cereals. I was just at the age where I was like, for fuck's sake, we're not even trying to pretend there's any nutrition here. But at the same time was like, I want to eat those now. So I was like right at the cusp where I was like, offended and also very much wanted them, because they used to just be like shit. They used to just be weird shaped Cheerios with marshmallows, and I was never into Lucky Charms that much because of that fact. I'm like, yeah, the marshmallows are nice, the other bits are just Cheerios. And weirdly, eating sweet things with Cheerios just makes you more keenly aware of how Cheerios aren't sweet. Like eating Cheerios by themselves is fine, but if you pair it with marshmallows, it's like, yeah, these Cheerios kind of suck. So, because every time Cheerios would make like a sweet, like berry or whatever Cheerios, they kind of sweetened up the cereal at the same time because they knew it had to balance. But yeah, damn it. Now I want to go get some Frankenberry or something. Finally try it out. Well, maybe next week I'll have all three and I'll like taste test them on the show.
I like cereal. But I eat no sugar added cereals like shredded wheat and grape nuts. I just don't like sugar in my cereal at all. Maybe because of how I was raised. Even though I put sugar in cereal when I was a kid, the cereal itself wasn't sweetened. And sometimes I would just eat it unsweetened, and I did kind of like it that way. And now as an adult, I always like it that way.
I had rules about what number, how high on the ingredient list sugar was. That was the rule in my house. I think it was either fourth or fifth. If it was any higher than that, I couldn't get it. And so the sweetest thing I could get was probably Kix.
Oh, we had Kix.
I take it back. Cinnamon Life was a common one, and that was probably the sweetest one. But mostly it was Grape Nuts, Cheerios, Rice Krispies, Kix.
There's only three cereals we would have in our house that were probably oversweetened. And I don't know why Mom decided to do that, but it was Honey Nut Cheerios or some version of sweetened Cheerios.
Do Honey Nut Cheerios, yeah.
What was this?
Technically, it was Honey Nut Tastios. Because it was the store brand.
Oh, Golden Grahams. We got.
Oh no, sometimes. That was too much.
And I think we did have Kix on occasion. Oh, and we did have sometimes, rarely, we would get Captain Crunch, but it was either the peanut butter crunch or the other kind. It wasn't with the berries in it.
Peanut butter Captain Crunch was a thing in my family, and we all loved it. But it was a treat. And so generally what happened is when we were on vacation, we would get it and we would go through it really fast because we'd be like, I want a snack. I'm just pour some in a cup and just eat it dry because we all loved it. So like when we'd go to the beach and like rent a place for a week or whatever in the summer, we'd get a lot of peanut butter Cap'n Crunch.
It's good stuff.
It is.
Probably not good for you, but it was.
No, that's the thing. And I love sweet cereal so much. But hey, I mean, just straight up terrible for you on in a variety of ways, and especially at my age, and especially at my weight, and especially at my being diabetic. Terrible for you. But also at my age, if you eat much of them, you're like physically you're gonna regret it. Like very quickly, you're like, oh, that was a horrible. It's the equivalent of just eating like a shit ton of candy or something. Like,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
Just like, oh. So.
And we feed this to kids.
It used to be, what does we? I don't let children have it. If I see children with it, I take it from them. I'm my own meme now, like my own cartoon commercial thing is me stealing it from children just to save them from my fate.
We as a society, I mean, it's like a thing in American society. Oh, yeah. Give kids this as breakfast food to prepare them for school. What?
So there's a whole genre now of like breakfast, like biscuits and things like that are just on the go kind of, you know.
Sure.
Eating things. And breakfast cookies is one. And, you know, they've got like whole grain and stuff like that. And our neighbors were into those for a while and they were eating them and we kind of weren't, but you know, they do that. They've been known to do sort of health fads on occasion. And so they were doing this and I don't remember what happened. I think Trish said something to cause the mom to go look up the nutrition information. And we're in the other room and we just hear her say, "These are just cookies." Like there was like ingredient wise and nutritionally nothing different from just like oatmeal cookies you would buy in the cookie aisle at the store. And they'd been having them for breakfast, giving them the kids for breakfast.
One of the things I find super ironic about the whole industry that revolves around breakfast food, snack food, candy, sodas, that whole, if you put all those things together, that whole heavily sugar oriented industry,
mm-hmm.
each one of those verticals in that overall super vertical, if you will, is kind of invented, almost all of them are invented by somebody who was usually a religious person, like a Quaker or even a Seventh-day Adventist, who was interested in giving people a healthy alternative to whatever they were doing. Like, you know, sodas were supposed to be a healthy alternative to alcohol. Chocolate or breakfast foods were supposed to help people who were working class people, who were poor, who couldn't afford to get good nutrition, to get better nutrition. I mean, a lot of the things at the base of a lot of the foods that we today consider the worst were invented by people who were trying to help, usually poor people, make better lifestyle choices. And yes. Now these are the foods that those same people are probably over consuming and are disproportionately diabetic and all this other stuff.
Yes.
It's completely backfired on the good intentions of the people who started those food revolutions.
And let's not forget, it completely backfired because in part, as time went on, say in the 1960s, a whole bunch of research was done into the possible health effects of sugar, and the sugar industry bribed the shit out of the people doing that research to say, it's not a big deal, it's fat you should worry about. And so everybody and their dog made all these low fat, fat free things that just had a shit ton of sugar in it instead. And now we all are used to it. We need our fix.
I mean, you're absolutely right about all that, Embus. I mean, when you look at the sugar industry in general, for one, sugar was one of the main commodities that fueled the slave trade. If you want to keep going back further in the problems with sugar and the problematic aspects of sugar in our society, you can go clear back to that. And then, like you were saying, the sugar industry and sugar lobbies and sugar whatever, minimizing the role of sugar in these foods in terms of being a health problem and blaming something else that was not causing the problems they claimed. I mean, all of that. Yeah, that's terrible. The sugar industry has just been awful from the very beginning.
That being said, I feel like we're getting dangerously close to taking a position on something, so I'm going to flip it and say favorite brand of jelly beans.
I don't really like jelly beans that much, to be honest, so they're all about the same to me.
I don't traditionally, because we grew up with shitty jelly beans.
That's like, probably true.
Like,
yeah.
No offense, but Brock's, your standard jelly beans are trash. Just straight up trash.
That's probably
true. But there's always been Jelly Belly. And I like Jelly Belly. Jelly Belly is probably my second favorite. For a while, was my favorite. Problem with Jelly Belly is it's very stressful. Because I never, I mean, maybe it's just me. I've never just had like a bag of a flavor of Jelly Belly.
Oh.
It's always like every single flavor in the bag. And so then it's like, what one is this? And this is before we got into these birdie bots. This one tastes like puke stuff.
Yeah.
These were just like, okay, is this root beer or is this chocolate? And I'm like, I know I'm going to like either one, but like, what's my mouth ready for? You know, and I don't want to mix, you know, this with, is this licorice or is this a really dark, like grape, you know, that kind of shit. Terrible. So it's my second favorite. They're very good, but they're stressful on me. No, the best, hands down. In fact, you may not have had them because they're new enough that you might not eat that shit now. Starburst makes jelly beans and they're amazing.
I've had Starburst jelly beans.
Starburst jelly beans are amazing.
Or is it, does Jolly Ranchers make a jelly bean?
If they do, I haven't had it. That would be tasty, but this is Starburst.
I think I've had the Starburst ones.
They're amazing. They're the perfect jelly bean. They're Easter candy was happening, and so we didn't get much, but I wanted to get a bag of the little Cadbury's mini chocolate eggs, because I don't know why, but they're really tasty more than other chocolate like that. Probably because it's Cadbury instead of Hershey's, I don't know. And Trish was like, get some Starburst jelly beans. And the other day, I was making her a little tiny thing of them to take to her while she was working. And I had filled a little much, so I took one and I ate it. I was just like, oh, shit, I forgot how good these are. So I had to have a little cup of them, too. They're awesome. And they're awesome in the way that, like, they're all fruit flavor. They're all, each flavor is good. So there is no stress. Like, you could eat, I like to eat them one at a time to sort of savor. But, like, you could just sort of close your eyes and grab three. Still tastes good. You do that with Jelly Bellies, you don't know what the fuck's happening. Like, imagine that. You close your eyes, you grab three Jelly Bellies. Like, what? I got a jalapeno, a buttered popcorn, and a chocolate mousse. What is that? My mouth just is like, huh? Like, no, that would not. That'd be awful. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Magical Talking Hat Podcast. The only podcast in the world where I'm going to paint my nails live on the air. I've been meaning to do this for a while because I don't got a job, so who the fuck cares? But I wanted to do it timed right in terms of what length my nails were for sort of maximum time to enjoy it before they need to be trimmed again and whatever. And I couldn't get around to it. And a friend the other day was like, because I said, this week, what I'm going to do, I put it on my chore list for this week, paint my nails. My friend was like, that clearly, that, I mean, if you want to do it, just do it. And if you're not doing it, then you've been, and I'm like, that's fine. But the problem is my brain still thinks I want to do it and I'm still not doing it. So I'll come up with it. So it was on my chore list, but I still haven't got around to it. So I figure I'll do it during the podcast. For the record, this brand is Zoya. The color is called Tony, T-O-N-I. And I have not used it before. So it's out of Trish's collection. So.
What kind of shade is it? Is it like a red or a blue?
It's a pretty dark wine, I'd say. Wine, yeah. Plum color.
Oh, that's a good color. I like that.
So we will see how this goes. So for those of you just joining us, I should explain how this show works because it's not mostly about cereal and nail polish. It could be, though. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. and people we know and love, and occasionally people we don't know, but still somehow love, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghead@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, topics, questions, things like that. Wow, I have not done this in a long time, and I am bad at it. Did I say what they write in with? No. Comments, questions, topics, notes, things like that. The hat magically, on its own, transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. It's incredibly fashionable. Servants draw the note cards out of the hat, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour, and that's the whole show. Frequently it's longer, except for the parts that aren't, which is the vast majority of it. Oh man, I hope I don't smear nail polish on the inside of the hat. I feel like that would get me in trouble. So, how's your week been?
You're Tony.
Oh, hi, Tony. Hi. Hi.
And I'm William. And this is episode 524.
Wow.
I hope that's right, because that's what I just said.
I think it is. I like to think our fans were yelling at the screen, or yelling at their thing when they're like, dude, you're Tony. What episode number is it?
Let me see how it looks. I want to see.
Well, I'm not done yet.
Well, I just want to. Yeah. That's nice.
Yeah, it's a disaster in how I'm doing it, though.
But it's a very good color, though.
I like it. It's very similar. I used to wear a color in college all the time called Vixen that was similar, that I really liked. I think it was Revlon. I'm not sure.
Do you just pick a color based on what you like, or do you like to coordinate it with what you're wearing or any kind of accessories, or what do you do?
No, I just pick it based on what I like. And also in college, I was just weird about it. So for a while I was doing it on both nails and hands, and I was growing out my nails really long. I had some very long nails. And then at a certain point, I got this idea where my left hand, I grew out my nails and I painted it. And then the other hand, I didn't paint, and I kept them very short and trimmed. I thought that was a cool look. There were also additional useful benefits for that, but certain people will know what those are about. You don't have to talk about that. So you're William. How's your week been?
So we saw Godzilla versus Kong yesterday.
Oh, thank goodness. I was hoping you had. I wanted to ask about that.
So
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, what we did was we watched Kong Skull Island like a few days ago. Then the next night we watched Godzilla, and then we watched King of Monsters. All
were these sort of ramp up. Were those all rewatches for you?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, Skull Island and Godzilla, we both noted that we liked them much better the second time around. We didn't dislike them the first time. They were fine, but this time we watched them and was like, yeah, these are actually pretty good. I mean, pretty good for someone who's into that kind of material. I don't know
if I recommend them
to someone who's not into that, but for a person who appreciates the original King Kong and the original Godzilla like I do, and for a person who appreciates kaiju like Abby does, we both really liked Skull Island and Godzilla the second time around quite a bit. King of Monsters, not so much. I mean, the tone was dramatically changed from those other two movies, and not for the better. But it was, you know, it was still okay. There were still a lot of things we did like about it. So we were prepped and ready to go, and really looking forward to seeing Godzilla versus Kong. And our feelings about it, I think, match what most critics' feelings about it are. Like if you go to Rotten Tomatoes and you look at what the critic consensus is and the audience consensus, they both say pretty much the same thing, which is that the character development and the story were like worthless, but the but the action was so good. Like the audience rating is, or the critic rating is like 79 or 80 right now. And the audience rating is like 93.
Well, and that's been a huge complaint in the last two Godzilla movies. The first Godzilla movie, they say you hardly ever got to see Godzilla. And the second one, they were like, yeah, you got to see a lot more monsters, but it was often very hard to see. And so a lot of audience response has just been, give us more monster fights. So I guess that makes sense.
Well, I have to say, that's another thing about what I remember about the original Godzilla was that you hardly ever saw Godzilla. You could barely see Godzilla when Godzilla showed up. And then everything was interrupted with these little human drama vignettes that were like, why do I care about this?
Yeah.
But for some reason, when we watched it on our television, it seemed like Godzilla showed up plenty and you could see him really well. So it's like, well, that's not a problem anymore. But also, even the human stuff, even though it wasn't, you did kind of think, hey, get back to Godzilla. It didn't seem as meaningless. Like I understood it more. Maybe when I saw it in the theater, I didn't hear completely all the stuff about the human plot that I was supposed to hear, so that I didn't understand why it even mattered. But watching it on television, I was like, oh, okay, I do kind of care about what's going on with these characters. So this isn't as bad as I remember. But in this movie,
they're an absolute disaster. It's just the first coat, but I'll let them dry.
But it's a really cool color, though.
I really like it. It's pretty nice.
But in this movie, though, it's like all of the stuff that was bad about King of Monsters, and King of Monsters didn't do that well, and I think its critic rating on Rotten Tomatoes is really bad. All the stuff that people didn't like about that movie, they basically doubled down in this movie, but
better monster fights.
The monster fights were taken to the next level. And look, I will watch action movies, but when I watch an action movie, the action's about the thing I'm least interested in. I mean, when the action scene comes, I'll go get something in the kitchen or whatever. I don't care. This was the exact opposite.
I remember you famously loved the Fast and the Furious franchise purely for the melodrama. I remember.
This was the exact opposite. I wanted to be there when they were fighting. And it was so good. It was so good. And whenever anything was happening just with characters, didn't care. And I didn't need to care because it was so bad. And I feel sorry for the actors because they had some good actors. All the actors were very good. That's not their fault. But the stuff they were doing with the actors was not interesting, not compelling, not anything.
So did King of Monsters. King of Monsters had some of my favorite actors out there today.
Yeah.
I haven't seen any of these. I in general am not into kaiju movies. They're very much in a camp that if somebody was like, hey, I want to watch this right now, should we watch it? I'd be like, sure, but not enough that I would like seek them out.
Well, I would, after watching Skull Island and Godzilla again, I would totally like us to get like Blu-ray copies of it that we can watch, because I did like it that much. I would only get King of Monsters just because it's kind of part of the whole thing and it's
to complete the set. Yeah.
Right. And I don't know. I think I'd kind of like to watch this one again in case there's other things I can appreciate about it besides just the fights.
You've got time.
But the fights are really good. I mean, like if Abby said, well, let's just get the Blu-ray for the fights, I'd be like, yeah, let's even fast forward, because they are so good. They're so well choreographed and they look so cool. And
that's probably enough that when I tell Trish, she'll have us watch it this weekend or something.
Yeah, I mean,
but I have an important question to ask you, and this is good because I couldn't remember if you were into these or not, but I am very confused. So the original Godzilla, not original, the original in this series.
Okay.
Godzilla, kind of scary, kind of problematic in that he's, you know, destroying things and shit like that. But essentially, of the monsters, is the good one.
In a manner of speaking, yeah.
Yes. King of the Monsters, it's, I think, much more definitive. Godzilla is the good monster.
That's
so is Mothra, but Mothra dies.
Yeah, less ambiguous. Still yes. In a manner of speaking, though, I would say.
Yeah. Skull Island. King Kong is essentially the good. I mean, that one, from what I know of it, is a little more ambiguous because there's not a lot of interaction. But like, we seem to be rooting for King Kong.
It's actually less ambiguous.
Oh, okay, okay.
In Skull Island, he is undisputably protecting the indigenous humans and is only attacking the new people that come because they attacked him.
Okay.
That's pretty unambiguous on that one.
So, who's the good guy, who's the bad guy in this one? The trailers make it look like Kong's the good guy.
Well, I feel like I'd be giving things away if I made a committed statement on that. It's not a simple answer is what I'm saying.
Oh, and all right. All right. That's fair.
It's part of the plot for you to suss all that out.
All right. I'll take that.
Which, honestly, that's something I liked about it.
On its surface, I like that idea.
Yeah. The thing about it is, the story that pertains to Godzilla and Kong and their conflict with one another, that to me was actually kind of interesting. What was going on with the human characters, I could have cared about, and I would normally want to care about, but they didn't even try, it didn't seem like. But, I mean, the stuff that was going on with the monsters was interesting to me. Not just that they were fighting or the scenes where they were fighting, but just the whole thing with them was interesting to me. So, I mean, yeah, it might interest you, that part of it, maybe. I don't know. It looks
good. I was just curious, yeah. Trish may have us watch it this weekend. Trish will watch it. So,
like with most things, people are asking, you know, Team Kong or Team Godzilla or whatever, you know, so you get that. While our household likes Godzilla and likes Kong sort of separate, I think there was a little bit of a favorability toward one versus the other.
I historically have not given a shit about King Kong, and I'm very much Team Godzilla in almost everything. But I haven't seen any of these, or the 2000 one with Matthew Broderick,
which we liked, by the way.
Really?
Yeah.
You are literally the only people alive who did, including everyone who was involved in the making of it. Like, you are the only people alive who liked
it. I mean, believe me, it had its problems, and we know that. But we liked it. We've seen it more than once.
So they should give you the rights to it or something.
I didn't think it was that bad.
Anything else happened this week?
Just today. I'll try to make this brief, but I wanted to mention it because it's so cool to me. So recently in Des Moines, they were working on some streets in Des Moines and they found some tracks, like rail tracks underneath them. Because Des Moines used to have a rail system in it, trolley system.
I'm calling it right now. This is going to lead to the Oak Island money pit, isn't it?
No. But maybe something similar.
Frightened at how slow it took you to answer that.
Maybe I shouldn't talk about this.
Come on. No, we're all in it now. Come on. So trolley system in Des Moines. They unearthed some tracks.
And while I was watching the news, they talked about how this guy was talking about how his dad used to work for the rail system there and how he stopped working for them in 61. Well, my dad would have been a teenager in 61. So I asked him, I said, well, do you know anything about the rail system in Des Moines? Oh yeah, and it was electric and they had cables all over the place. And when they got rid of them, there were still tracks for a long time. I didn't know any of that stuff. I thought that was really cool stuff. Then today he texts me and says, well, my dad used to tell me a story about a guy named Chicago Mike who lived in Melcher, who was a gambler and who
I don't think you get a name like Chicago Mike if you're not a gambler.
He was a gambler, and he was in Des Moines in his fast fancy car in 1924, whatever a fast fancy car was in 1924, and he got hit by one of these trolley cars and died. And Dad always talked about how there was cash all over. I mean, all over the crime, the crime scene, the accident scene. Cash all over the place.
Muddy Pinata. That was his other name.
Basically. And Dad said his dad told him this story on a number of occasions, and he and me talking about the rail system reminded him of that, but he didn't know anything else about it. And he wanted to know if I could find out. So I said, sure. And it turns out that the Chicago Mike. Okay, so in the region that I grew up in, which is south
Mouser Dallas, Iowa.
Southwestern Marion County, Northern Lucas County, Southeast Warren County. This whole region has a bunch of coal mines.
The Tri-County area.
And it's, well, it's, let's just say there's a lot of cultural similarity in all of this whole area. In fact, Sheraton is the county seat of Lucas County. And it's the same distance away from my house as Knoxville, which is the county seat of Marion County. So, you know, it's all that stuff is sort of a similar culture and whatever. And a lot of Croatians live in that area, and they were attracted by the coal mining. And this guy, whose last name I can't pronounce, he came from Croatia, and he lived in Chicago.
I mean, his last name was Mike, right?
No.
You said.
No, actually, his first name was
Marco. First name Chicago.
His first name was Marco, and his last name was something I can't pronounce. He was from Croatia. He lived in Chicago for a little while and in Colorado for a little while, but he settled in this area of Iowa as a coal miner. And but he wasn't very good at mining. I think he even got injured in the mine. So then what he did after that was he was a gambler and a bookie and a liquor producer, because he had a still, and a bootlegger.
Nice.
And he got the nickname Chicago Mike because he would go to Chicago sometimes to ply his trade and make extra money there. But what he would do is he had a circuit he would go through that went through Lucas County and Marion County, and I think a little bit of Warren County, going to the mining towns. And when they had their paydays, he would kind of bring this sort of mobile casino there, and he would let people gamble. And I think he would bring the liquor that he made there, and that's how he made his money.
Wow, this guy might be my hero.
Well, not only did he make a lot of money doing this, but whenever someone was in need or had a problem, presumably even people who were in trouble because they were addicted to gambling or alcohol, he would help them out. He was very well liked because he brought booze and gambling to people, but also because if anybody was ever in trouble, he would help them out. And he often had tons of money on him, like thousands of dollars. Now, this is $1,000 in the 1920s was like $15,000 today. So this guy must have had a lot of money, and he spent it readily on people to help them out, or on his friends or whatever else. And he was married to a woman from Newton. But he wasn't a very good husband, I guess. So she divorced him. And the very next day is when they were in Des Moines together. She later claimed that they were going to get remarried, that she regretted divorcing him. And they were. But at the time, he had a wad of like $2,000, which again, it's like 30 grand. I mean, he was just carrying with him, and some silver. He was the coroner and other investigators. The coroner was named Howard Wright, by the way, just by coincidence. No relation. But they determined that he was speeding when the accident happened. And he was 34 years old and he died. His
34. Dang.
His ex-wife was injured, but she survived. And she sued later for the money. All that money that had been scattered and gathered up by the police, she sued for it, and she got about half of it because the other half was used to pay for his funeral, which was expensive because his body was sent to Chicago, and he was buried there.
Because they were like, who is this? And it's like Chicago Mike. And they're like, well, I guess that's where it's kind of going.
He has since been moved to Sheraton. Now he's buried in Sheraton with his brother. His brother, his...
Kenosha Phil.
His brother's name is John. He didn't come over originally with Marco. When Marco had made a lot of money, he brought his brother over. And his brother ended up living to like 100 years old. He only died in like 2012.
Nice.
And made sure that he brought his brother back to Sheraton. And and John lived in Arizona, and his body had to be shipped to Sheraton so that they could be buried together. But the thing about this is that back when, in 1924, when Chicago...
Second coat. Yeah, still great. Gross. No, it's an edge. I'll clean it up later when it dries. I can scrape it off the parts of the skin. Look at it. But
back when, right after Chicago Mike died, John, who had been living in Chicago at that time, came back to Iowa saying he was looking for between $5,000 and $8,000, like $125,000 in today's money, that he thought Mike had left there for him, and he never found it. And in fact, people suspect that, you know, Mike had a lot of money, which he naturally wouldn't have put in a bank or anything like that, and that he hid it somewhere and nobody knows. It might be in Marion County, you know, around where I live. He lived in Melcher.
Or Lucas County,
but
the other one.
Warren County.
Or Oak Island.
But he lived in Melcher for the last year of his life. So what I'm saying is, if I wanted to write a fictional account about this, it would be completely plausible for this guy to have had like over $1 million in today's money hidden somewhere around Melcher. And I could write this really cool story about it.
The problem being, cash does not follow inflation.
Well, that's true. So it would have to be like in silver or gold, which he did have some silver. We know that. So maybe he has it in like gold or silver. Then it would really be worth a lot. Oh, man. Wouldn't that be a cool story? Didn't it though?
I mean, you get to decide because you're the writer.
That's true, but it's got to be cool. It's got to be a cool place. I mean, there's a lot of abandoned mines, but I'm not sure he would have hidden it in an abandoned mine.
Do some shit where you have to take a piece of paper and stand on a hill at a certain time of year and right. Like match it up and stuff. All of that.
Yeah, but it was just what's fun.
Booby traps, lots of booby traps.
What's fun is to realize that there's an actual historical person who I could plausibly tell a story about this, like in Mel, if I wanted to. That I find that really fun and exciting, and I never even knew that until today.
I'm willing to attest that your story is 100% true and accurate. If you want, I'll make that claim. I'll claim to be his long lost something, and that's absolutely what happened.
Ooh, you know what would be cool. Okay. So in Marion County, there's a reservoir called Red Rock Reservoir. It's called Red Rock because the town of Red Rock was flooded when the reservoir was created. What if the treasure is in Red Rock?
Oh!
That would be awesome. In order
to find it, you have to taint the city's water supply.
Oh, come on. This is good stuff. I love it. Okay, fine. I mean,
it's stuff.
It's not your kind of thing, but I love it. It's pretty cool.
Anyway, I think you should write it.
Anyway, so I was excited by that. So how was your week?
Well, let me pause here for a second. So does this mean you have not watched The Irregulars at all?
No, I did watch The Irregulars.
Have you guys watched the whole thing?
I'm pretty sure we have, yeah.
Well, yeah. I assumed, but then you weren't talking about it.
I forgot.
Now, keeping in mind, I've only watched 3 episodes. How are you feeling? What'd you think?
Well, whenever someone takes a fictional property that is not supernatural in nature and in some ways anti-supernatural nature, like right now there's a TV show called Nancy Drew on the CW. And, you know, Nancy Drew was decidedly like, you know, someone might think something supernatural and it turned out it wasn't. And here's a supernatural show. It's like, well, that seems to go against the whole spirit of this character.
Agreed.
So I usually don't like that kind of thing. But I thought this was okay. I mean, I thought it was, I mean, we watched the whole thing. I don't know if we thought it was spectacular, but it's like, it was watchable. We'd probably watch another season if they had one.
I have come to the belief that this show is very much like the show Merlin, in that we have taken the names of characters and things from the original property and a couple of concepts real loosely, and then just done whatever the fuck we want.
No, that's exactly right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's easier to digest. But when you know that going in, it's helpful. So this is a PSA for our listeners. If you're going to watch it, it doesn't function the way Sherlock Holmes functions, like, at all.
No.
Not really. It has a lot of problems.
Sure it does, yeah.
It has a ton of problems. And it has a big problem that I can't tell if it's a very common problem in TV these days or if it's a problem inside me. In recent years, I have watched many things that feel very much like an older person created this thing thinking they know what younger people like and are into and being wrong. And I don't know if that's becoming more prevalent or if I'm just getting old and therefore things seem more like that because they seem confusing to me, sort of. But this show very much smacks to me of what old people think young people are like. Like, I don't know. It seems hip and cool in a way that is super not hip and cool.
Well, it's trying to be part of a sort of a genre that started recently where you're telling period stories, but you're ignoring some period issues. you haven't watched, you said you've only watched three, so I won't get into it. But let's just say there's a lot of people of color who have positions in society that you wouldn't expect they'd have in that period.
It's got colorblind casting a la Bridgerton, and that's not what I'm talking about. Although, discovered a different problem. Colorblind casting is wonderful, except for white people who are racist, like me and Trish, because we keep getting confused as to whether or not that person is the same person or a different person. Like, it's bad. Like, there was one point where I was like, oh, so that's why X happened. And Trish is like, what do you mean? And I said, you remember the scene where da 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 da? And she's like, oh yeah, sorry. In my fear of being too racist, I've just assumed that literally every child of color I meet is a different character. I didn't realize that was the same one from that scene. And there's other ones, because like John Watson is black in this. And in the second episode, you start looking at a guy dressed like John Watson, who's also black and has a beard. And I spent a long time going, he changed his mustache. Why the fuck was that like a pilot? They decided, and then I'm like, oh fuck, it's a different man entirely. And I'm just an asshole. And it was a different man entirely. And I'm just an asshole. So that is a problem. I freely admit it's my problem. It's not their problem. But it was an unforeseen consequence of colorblind acting. I'm just like, yeah, now I just fuck up stuff because I have so many assumptions built into my head. But yeah, not that. I mean, and there are just, there's a lot of turns of phrase that they use that somebody in the first episode says pronto. And I'm like, nobody here knows that word. No one in this entire city of Victorian London knows that word.
That happens quite a few times where they use especially modern slang type stuff. I think they do that a couple times.
And straight up, the music makes me want to kill myself.
I think for
goddamn cutting edge, hardcore, like hip hop beats in the background of these Victorian London scenes. I'm like, fuck right off. That is, I hate it so much. I don't hate the music, not or the setting. The two together, vomit.
I like the female lead actor so much, though. I can't remember her name. I hate that. I can't remember her name, but she's so good.
She
I really
plays,
like
plays yeah, Beatrice in this.
Yes, Beatrice. Very good. I really like her.
I have decided now. The third episode helped. I think I like it now. It has a lot of problems. I think I like it. And I think one reason I like it is it has very distinctive and, very important, consistent characters. I am three episodes in, and I genuinely feel like I know and understand each of our main characters and who they are. And none of them, they do things that piss me off, but none of them do things that I'm like, that's not what they would do. Like, they're very themselves.
Yeah.
And the show is doing a decent job of giving everybody some time. There's clearly the more important characters than the others, and they all do stupid shit and all that, but like, they have consistent characters and they're fairly believable characters to me, and I enjoy that. And in particular, based on certain things, I looked it up, and the character of Leo is decent, has decent historical precedent.
Yeah.
That was kind of cool. Like, not only just his physicality issues, but aspects of his personality and so forth are sort of tied into historic records. So that's kind of cool. Douchebag John Watson is annoying as shit, but I mean, they're doing something with it. Yeah. Spoiler alert. John Watson's an asshole.
Abby didn't like that.
Does not. It's very uncomfortable. But they're clearly doing, like, it's not just, it wasn't just like, this is fun, we'll do, like, they've clearly got a point for it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've started digging it. That third episode where we're all in the mansion together, like, that, the character's got a lot of play, and I think that brought a lot of things for me, so. Kind of enjoying that. Watched a film that's been on my radar for a long time, but I've just been trepidatious about it. And someone, and I can't remember who, because they are in trouble, finally said, oh yeah, no, you should definitely watch that. I think you'll like it. And they were wrong. It is a horror film called Await Further Instructions. It is on Netflix. I might recommend it to people, just not to me. It is... I don't want to spoil anything. I think it's actually a very good movie until the end. The end is dumb. The reveal of what is actually happening makes no sense in the context of the rest of the film, in my opinion. The film itself, though, is very well done. The film deals, and the ending sort of doesn't matter. That's not the point of the movie. But the movie deals with as horrific concepts, the idea of mob mentality and adherence to blind authority and that kind of stuff, which can, and it, I think it's done very well. I mean, to really give you the vibe on this, this all deals with a specific family. Their last name is Milgram.
Oh.
So that's kind of a tip off there, like right away, right away there.
Yeah.
Every time I'm like, that's hilarious. I love that. But the problem is I fucking hate that stuff. That stuff to me is very much too much in the camp of that's real shit that happens. I don't want to watch horror movies about that because that's shit that can actually go down. So I thoroughly hate it. But it's not the movie's fault. If that is the kind of exploration that one finds interesting, I think I would recommend it. Decent movie. Not too long. It's on Netflix. Good performances. Good production values. Check it out. If you like that. Last night, I do want to touch on this a little bit because it's weird. I saw a movie last night called Mercy Black, also on Netflix. And I like and hate that Netflix just wants me to do thumbs up or thumbs down. And I didn't do either last night, but I thought about it this morning. I gave it a thumbs up, but it's marginal. There's some really good things and some really bad things about this movie. You've got a look on your face. Have you seen this movie?
I'm trying to remember if I have.
Well, you'll know when I explain it, I think. the premise, I love the idea, and there's a brilliant movie in this concept. So to pick an example out of air from real life things that happened, do you remember a while back a young, I want to say 12-year-old girl and her friend stabbed another friend in the woods as a tribute to Slender Man, I think?
Yes.
And those kind of things happen periodically. This movie proposes that a thing like that happened in the early aughts, and the girls involved, of course, were sent away to asylums. And meanwhile, this was like the origin of a particular version of these, and it became a thing. So like, imagine that story with the girls had been the first time anyone had ever talked about Slender Man, and it like was invented there. It's not what happened. Slender Man has a weird history involving a stupid website, but that kind of thing. And then this story is 15 years after that, one of the girls has, you know, been in therapy this whole time and has been treated for schizophrenic tendencies and things like that, and medicated and all this, and is now being released back out in the world. And she's going to live in her family home. Her parents are now dead, with her sister, who lives there with her son. And it's her dealing with being in the real world again, her dealing with the aftermath of, she's still in the town where it happened, and people who live there still feel ways about it, and dealing with the thing that it became a viral sensation, and she was incarcerated back when the internet was hardly a thing. And so learning all of this and dealing with this, and of course just dealing with her own issues and being out in the world. I think this is a brilliant sort of psychological thriller there. I love that idea. This movie turns it into a, well, a lot of it turns it into a very standard, I'm like, oh shit, no. But in this one, the evil thing is real, and it's just all that. Now we have to save all the people, and everybody thinks I'm crazy, but I'm like, okay, it just got turned into one of these movies that they make shit tons of them. And you just have to rename what the scary thing is, each one, and then it's fine. But then things twist a little bit. And the story becomes more interesting again. It ends very unsatisfyingly, in my opinion. It ends very much on just the last moment kind of thing that sort of doesn't resolve anything. And so I am disappointed for that. I really feel like a good movie could have come out of this. And it's well performed and everything. So I think it's good food for thought. I think if somebody thinks that kind of shit is interesting, it's worth seeing to provoke thoughts. I don't know that I think it's a great movie by itself. It's not a terrible movie, but it's, again, as I've run in with a lot of these lately, I'm like, it's a heartbreaker. It's unsatisfying because I saw the start of something really cool. And I think that idea, when you leave out the supernatural elements, is very intriguing and could make for a really interesting story. But that's not what this is. But that's also not what this is. I don't want to give it away. The story is not as simple as it looks. But
I still can't remember if I've seen this. It seems like I have, but I just can't. I don't remember.
Yeah. But it's on Netflix. So yeah, if anybody wants to check it out. The actors in it are very good. Mostly women in it. And a couple of them that I looked them up afterwards because I'm like, they were really cool. I should see what other stuff they've done. And for the most part, they've either done shit I really don't care about or they haven't done much. So hopefully I'll see more of them after this. Yeah, I don't think there's a lot else to talk about over here. Oh, no, there is. I went and visited somebody this week.
Who's that?
So a friend of mine who used to be my boss a couple bosses ago, who I think I've talked about her before. She's basically the only listener to our podcast that I actually know exists and that participates not at all. Didn't mean to throw the shocker up there, people. My numbers are weird because my nails are drying. I suppose my brother kind of counts. I know my brother listens sometimes, but I don't have any sense of how often. This is one of our loyal listeners, but she does not comment. She does not send in questions, nothing. But we've been talking for a while because the weather's getting better and she has a big house out in the country and it has a big deck on it. And I was like, when the weather gets good, I'll bring lunch and we can socially distant hang out for a while. And so we did that this Monday because the weather was really nice. I got sunburned. Wow. You can't really see now, but I got pretty good sunburned. And in retrospect, of fucking course I did. We sat out in the sun on the deck for like almost 3 hours. So yeah, that's how that works. She didn't think of it either. And she's a goddamn skin cancer survivor, but it just didn't even occur to us. But then later I was like, how did I, oh yeah, of course. But that was really fun to catch up. But it's funny because like right off the bat, she's like, I kind of know what's going on with you because I listen to you every week. So, and I was like, yeah, let's start with what's up with you. And that was funny to me because we were catching up, but like I had way less to catch her up on because yeah. She listened to the podcast. But so that was really fun. She also, remember my 240 milligram wild strawberry low calorie drink mix? She'd been drinking that exact one just all the time. Didn't ever check it until she heard the podcast. It's like, yep, that's the one. So I have had a tremendous impact on her physiology probably going forward. She's either gonna die or suddenly sleep way better than she's ever slept before. I don't know which. But yeah, so that was really fun. She also, I mean, she bought a VR headset, the Oculus Quest 2. Mm-hmm. And she had me try it out. And it was really fun and didn't make me motion sick. Mostly because there's bunches of shit you can do on it that don't involve you like moving places. So it doesn't confuse my inner ear because I'm literally doing what my inner ear thinks I'm doing. So I played a little Beat Saber and this thing called Wander, where basically it's like Google Maps Street View, but you can go down there and it's 360 around you. It's super awesome.
Nice.
So I'm actually looking into those a little bit. It was a good time. I'm researching those some, but so that was fun. I think that's mostly it. Should we do a question? I'd say we're over time, but we haven't been doing questions very well, so. All right, this one is from Azure Talon. Somebody's getting very comfortable with this because it opens with sup. Hot ones on YouTube. Spiciest thing you've eaten. General hot sauce thoughts. Azure Talon. I like this one. I have a lot of hot sauce thoughts. You ever watch Hot Ones on YouTube?
Yeah.
We watched it quite a bit for a while. I have discovered that I pick and choose very carefully. When they're awesome, they're awesome. Sometimes they're boring as hell. It's a big enough thing that this last week, Saturday Night Live did a sketch that was a fake version of it. Mm. That, which was funny because the whole bit was Maya Rudolph was hosting and she played Beyonce. And in it, Beyonce couldn't cope with the hot sauce. And it was kind of funny for that. But what was weird was Sean Evans, the host, they got Kyle Mooney to play him with a bald cap and everything. And I'm like, that is funny because admittedly, I think he's in LA and they're in New York. But there is no question that if they had asked him to come on and just play himself, he would have in a heartbeat. Probably. Like there's no way he would have been into that. But I do like that show. And yeah, there's a very sort of interesting vulnerability. You're not into food. So I have no idea if you're into spicy food. Because it's a subset of food, which you're not into.
Like most things with me, when I think I'm into something, the people who are really into it don't really think I'm into it. Like, I think I'm kind of into comic books, but people who are really comic books, they probably don't think I'm that much into comic books.
All right. So do you think you're into spicy food?
I feel like I am, except I know that there are certain, like, like I would never go on that show because even the lowest spicy thing they have is probably too spicy for me. But I do like, I mean, when we fix food,
I mean, here, the lowest thing they have is sriracha.
Oh, well, I'd probably be okay with that. Because we do. We put sriracha in things. We put Tabasco in things. I mean, we do use that kind of stuff in just about everything we cook. So to me, since almost everything we eat is spiced that way, for me, it's like, oh, yeah, I'm into spicy food. But I know that I wouldn't like that. So yeah. I think for people who are really into it, no, I'm not into it at all. Just liking things a little bit spicy.
Well, but it's the thing because there are different types of being into spicy stuff. Because I know people who just eat a lot of it. And so they just sort of have a tolerance. And so they're not trying to go crazy. There's just a level that they're into. Years ago, so my sister lived in New Mexico for a long time. And she married a man who was living in New Mexico and who was born and raised in Mexico. And so they have a lot of experience with chilies and they have a definite higher tolerance for that kind of stuff than we do. And like one year, my wife made a salsa verde that was essentially a mock version of like a tomatillo salsa using green tomatoes. All the tomatoes on the plants that didn't ripen, she used those. And it was really good and we liked it. It was quite spicy. So we used it carefully and things, but when we used it, it was very tasty. And so we would add a little, I think we made some enchiladas with it or whatever. And we gave some of it as gifts that year. And we gave some to my sister and her husband and they really enjoyed it. And one time I'm talking with my sister about this stuff and how much and spicy stuff, and things like that. And she's like, yeah, for us, that was a really tasty, mild salsa that we just ate with chips. And I'm like, all right. I think I would hate that, but
well, when works. I go to the local Indian restaurants and I'll get like a Jalfrezi or something, they'll say, "Do you want it spicy or not?" I always say no, because it's spicy. I mean, when what they give me is spicy to me. To them, it's like this isn't spicy, but to me, it is.
So most of the places we do have hot, medium, or mild. And I will say, Trish and I are at the point where mild, we want more. And we've discovered if you go to an Indian like lunch buffet, it's all spiced really mild so that everybody can eat it. And so it's not that, like, we don't like it as much. Mm. We go medium. We don't have the guts to say hot. Like, I don't, like, medium is plenty for us. And every once in a while, I'm like, I feel some spicy, but I'm like, I don't know what that means. I just know that's the top. Like, I don't have a sense. So why mess with it? But then I've got friends and they're all just random Midwestern white people who very specifically grow Trinidad scorpion peppers and Carolina reapers in their yard and then like make sauce out of them and then bring it into the office just to freak people out and to eat a little and claim it's not that bad. And I'm like, fuck off. I don't care. I have been in the Mall of America, at least back in the day in the Mall of America. They had a hot sauce store and it was very cool. It had hot sauces that instruct you to use it with a toothpick. Like just put some on a toothpick and dab. And I'm like, at that point, no, that's dumb. I am not into hot for hot's sake. But I'm pretty good. And it was a thing because I was always worried about too spicy. And then one time, maybe 10 years ago, I suddenly came to the realization that most restaurants and fast food places and stuff like that wanted people to eat their food. So whenever they came out with a super spicy thing, it probably wasn't so bad that like no one would want to eat it. It was probably mild enough that a decent chunk of the population would want to eat it, which meant it was probably fine for me. And ever since then, I have discovered the joys of the seasonal, like when the Angry Whopper comes out and stuff, that's really tasty. I discovered the joys of a lot of, you know, spicy chicken things and stuff like that. They're really good now that I've learned not to be afraid of that, because it's spicy, but it's spicy very much on a nationwide mainstream level. Mm-hmm. So it's very tolerable. We put a lot of, well, not a lot. We put sriracha in quite a bit. Cayenne and things. We enjoy that. But yeah, nothing crazy. I would say if you have to do it on a chili level, I'm a jalapeno guy. If you put jalapenos on stuff, I'm like, that's tasty. If you put serranos, I might be too much. I would go on hot ones, maybe. And I think I would make it all the way through. I would be one of those who was an absolute disaster. I would be one of those where you watch the episode not to learn more about me, but to see me lose my fucking mind. Like, that's what would happen. But that's the thing I've also discovered is it's, I mean, there is an endorphin rush from the pain. But also, I mean, it's just the pain up here, at least, is very temporary. Now, what you do to your digestive tract by doing that can be awful. Mm. And I do watch for that. And I don't like stuff like buffalo, you know. I used to say buffalo chicken or buffalo wings, but now they got buffalo flavored everything. Hate that shit. That stuff is gross to me. I'm like, it's just hot vinegar. Mm. Like, that's not a flavor to me. But if you get like, you know, like a Thai chili or something, oh, I love that. Even if it's real spicy, like that's really tasty. I need some flavor in there. I spent a long time. I'm slowly creeping back into enjoying black pepper. I spent a long time not, because I'm like, it's just uncomfortable. It's not got flavor, but I have sort of learned to work with it better. But
I put ground pepper on just about everything.
I do too, but I don't put a ton, and Trish wants me to put more, and I'm getting more into it.
Yeah, I put a lot on.
Mine is garlic. So recently I had to buy a mortar and pestle. Because we have a few in the house, but none of them are food safe because they've been used to like make incense and shit like that. But I bought one for cooking because, as an article explained to me one time, mortar and pestle, butter plus something equals compound butter. And it's true. And so I have been making compound butters like crazy. And I'll be honest, I say I've been making compound butters. I've been making garlic butter. I've been making a shit ton of garlic butter. And listen to my recipe. Take a head of garlic. Break off, I don't know, 3, 4, 5, 6 cloves. Peel them. Throw them in the mortar pestle. Whack off a hunk of butter, maybe half a stick, maybe 2/3 of a stick. Throw it in there. Mush it up, spread it on some shit, or just eat it with a goddamn spoon and thank me. It's super fucking tasty. And it's not even, I'm not good at it yet, because what I really need to be doing is mincing the garlic, I think, because I get these big pieces, but I make incredible garlic bread with this now in the toaster oven. I just sort of smear it on like I'm icing a cake and then put it in there. It's really good. But what I love is I have so much room to grow in the making of the garlic butter. But even now, at my like lowest level, it's fucking tasty. So this is a great thing to like have to reiterate to get better at. Oh, right. So tasty. Garlic. Oh, I love garlic. And the mortar and pestle makes it so easy to put garlic in your face. And I'm just doing it. I mean, I did a version where I added in some cheese and some salt and pepper and stuff. And it was really good, too. And yeah, but. Do yourself a favor, get a mortar and pestle, put garlic and other stuff in it. Go crazy. You know how I had to do when I bought this thing? To season it?
Oh, no.
First, I had to wash it with no soap. You never put soap in it or it'll taint it. but I had to wash it with hot water, scrub it good, and then let it dry. And then I had to put a small handful of white rice in it and grind it until it was ground, and then throw it away, and then do that again until it ground white. And they said this may take several handfuls, because I get it sort of comes out gray because it's getting shit off of the sides and everything like that.
Sure.
But the problem is it looked pretty white to start with. And also grinding uncooked rice is fucking hard.
Mm.
So I did it until I was like, you know what? I'm willing to eat bits of rock. So I'll live with it. And then you wash it again. And then it told me, put in 4 cloves of garlic. Muddle them a little bit, a teaspoon of salt, a teaspoon of pepper, and a teaspoon of cumin. Grind it all up. Quote unquote, enjoy the aromas. Throw that out. Wash it again good with hot water. Let it air dry, and now you're good to go. Like, I mean, I understand seasoning in general, but I'm like, you can do sweet things in it. Say, I'm like, how did you come? Okay. Garlic's pushing it. Like, to pick that, like, that's kind of specific. That's not just like salt and pepper. I get generic, whatever. The garlic's weird. The cumin is real specific. I'm like, the marjoram must be furious right now. The turmeric must be like, where the fuck do you get off? Like, why does cumin win that one? Why is cumin up on that level? And don't get me wrong, I love all of these things. And I did enjoy the aromas quite a bit. But I'm like, how did you pick that?
Enjoy.
That is incredibly specific. But ever since then, it's been fine. And it doesn't like smell like cumin or even smell like garlic after I wash it. You know, it's good. But all right. That's more than enough. I mean, hopefully my nails are dry by now. Tune in next week to see how the manicure held up. Also write us so that we can talk about your food stuff that you're into. Like Azertown got today. Have us talk about cold sauce. Maybe you're into cold sauce. If you do that, maybe explain to us what that means exactly. Not familiar with cold. Is that just like Pepto-Bismol? I don't.
Ranch, maybe. Maybe ranch is a cold sauce.
Now you've got in my head the idea of piping hot ranch.
Doesn't appeal, huh?
No. I bought some Green Goddess salad dressing, and it's been sitting in the cabinet because we had other stuff, but I opened it the other day for salad, and I was very excited because I love Green Goddess dressing. Boring as shit. It tastes like I put Miracle Whip on my salad. Either I have a very bad understanding of Green Goddess dressing, or the Green Goddess dressings I've had before have been very unique and special. Mostly I get it from Panera on their Cobb salad. Love it. But I feel like I've had it other places. This was neither Green nor Goddess. So I don't know what the fuck's going on. So
yeah, I think salad dressings would qualify as cold sauce. You eat it cold. It's not spicy usually.
Yeah, sometimes.
Sometimes. But like French.
Don't you love when you go to a restaurant like Chili's, I think, is like this. They have like 5 salad dressings and 3 of them are ranches. They've got like ranch, cilantro, lime ranch, and like Santa Fe ranch.
Or like, they've got
Trish straight up hates ranch, so that's really pushing it for her.
Or they've got French and Western, which I'm not really sure what the difference is between those two. French and Western, I don't know what the difference is.
I don't, that is a thing though. I remember as a kid, somebody invented Catalina dressing.
Oh yeah.
Catalina. And it was Western mixed with Thousand Island, I believe.
Oh, okay.
And it was a big deal. and I did not understand what the fuck was going on, because in my family, I understood what ranch was. It showed up sometimes. My family mostly did a vinaigrette, and then I was a sucker for blue cheese. But like outside of that, I mean, I think I knew what Thousand Island was. I don't know, but I was just like, I've never even heard of Western. What are you doing here? What is this? And it had this guy who was dressed as like a cowboy and then dressed as, I don't know, an archipelago. I don't remember what the other thing was. And then like they whirled him together and he was this guy in like a leisure suit, because that's what they wear in Catalina. I don't, it was something like that. Anyway. If you understand more about salad dressings than we clearly do, go to the blog, help us out, themagicaltalkinghat.com. Explain yourselves and your salad dressings, because we want to know. Also, recommend me a new shade for the future, because I ain't getting a job anytime soon, so I'm going to do what I want.
I like that one.
I do like this one, yeah. But, you know, like some, I like some variety. Mix things up a little. And then, yeah, write in themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, and then listen again next week, and you too could be a winner.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.